Unlike Royal Dutch Shell and Chevron, which ran many of their Nigerian oil wells onshore in the midst of impoverished and politically disenfranchised Delta populations, most of ExxonMobil's operations took place in ocean waters 11 to 75 miles offshore. The corporation's onshore base at Akwa Ibom, a private airport and housing compound in Ikhet, and its nearby Akwa Ibo terminal on the Atlantic Ocean, where piped oil could be stored and loaded for transport, had not been greatly troubled during past phases of militancy and insurgency in the Niger Delta. Southern Nigeria's most restive anti-government ethnic groups, such as the Jaws, had little local presence. These factors fed a tendency toward complacency about security threats in Nigeria back at headquarters in Irving. But during the months leading up to the Ikhet kidnapping, it had become clear that ExxonMobil was coming under serious and unprecedented threat. The surge in Nigeria's importance to global oil markets seemed to inspire into action the political and criminal gangs in the Delta's oil-endowed swamps. Northern ethnic elites had long dominated politics and wealth hoarding in Nigeria. Across decades, they had exploited the Delta's oil and left its people in poverty. The particular wave of violence that washed up at the ExxonMobil compound in Ikhet was only the latest manifestation of this conflict. In 2005, Nigeria's democratically elected president, the retired General Olusegun Obasanjo, sought to amend the constitution to extend his rule beyond 2 4-year terms. The power struggle that ensued among parliamentarians, Delta governors, and supporters of the president led to an upsurge in violence by armed gangs of thugs, students, and legitimately aggrieved insurgents. In Nigeria, it was never easy to separate criminals from political dissenters. Obasanjo established the Niger Delta Development Commission to invest in the neglected South and address the deprivation that fed crime and militancy. ExxonMobil contributed more than $100 million annually to the budget as part of its operating agreements. Yet the commission failed to deliver. Chaplin grew discouraged. He complained that ExxonMobil and other oil majors could not continue to be the only entities that address communities' needs because the companies simply are not equipped nor well-suited to becoming quasi-governments. Chaplin felt that now is the time for Nigerians to hold their government accountable. The country's incipient revolutionaries could be as nasty as the government kleptocrats they challenged, however. Delta gangs in early 2006 became newly audacious and ruthless. Kidnapping in the region had long been rampant, but in earlier eras, cases might be settled peaceably as kidnapper and victim sat together in a Port Harcourt bar, sipping beer, waiting for a final ransom to be determined, which they intended to divide between them. The region's kidnapping markets were highly evolved. Expatriate workers were assessed by kidnapping gangs on a potential for payment scale, Royal Dutch Shell's local executive explained to a visiting U.S. senator, with hostages from the United States or Western Europe garnering the highest ransoms, and Russian, Indian, and Asians the least. The oil majors tracked actual ransom settlements. Shell's matrix showed that the most recent ransoms were running at about $120,000. By 2006, however, raids and abductions led regularly to murder. Shadowy groups issued political demands, not just requests for ransom, and they spoke of revolution. Insurgent and pirate gangs deployed speedboats and raided corporate platforms offshore that they had never reached before. Once orderly ransom marketplaces yielded to price uncertainty. This devolution unfolded very quickly in late 2005 and early 2006. The United States, Britain, France, and the Netherlands formed a consultative group, the Delta Working Group, based in their embassies in the capital of Abuja and in their consulates in the economic capital of Lagos, to evaluate the emerging crisis. The question was, recalled John Campbell, then the United States ambassador to Nigeria, have things fundamentally changed? Campbell, an experienced career Foreign Service officer, believed they had. Insurgent groups in the Delta were issuing statements for the first time that threatened to shut down the country's oil industry. Their language increasingly attacked the Nigerian state and challenged its legitimacy to rule in the Delta. If you put all this together, we are far beyond where we have been, Campbell argued to colleagues that early winter of 2006. Nigerian military intelligence sources began to report specific threats against ExxonMobil in January. They said two groups, the Nigerian Ijaw Martyrs and the Ijaw Patriotic Front, had reportedly been handing out money to Akwa Ibom youths to join an attack on ExxonMobil's Kwa Ibo terminal. Chaplin's security team increased their alert status from Code Orange to Code Red, the highest possible level, at the targeted compound, but kept nearby Iket and other facilities at Orange. Threat upon threat followed. On March 9, a militia group styling itself the Martyrs' Brigade, which said it was acting on behalf of the emergent Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, or MEND, threatened to carry out massive attacks on ExxonMobil's Nigerian affiliate unless the corporation paid new compensation to local communities to make amends for a 1998 oil spill from one of its offshore pipelines. ExxonMobil has continued to pay deaf ears, sick, to the pitiable plight of a now pained and severely exploited people, the brigade said in a written statement, along with all other nationalist and freedom-fighting units in the Niger Delta. We hereby declare a 21-day grace period for ExxonMobil to honor its obligation to compensate every community that was affected by that catastrophic spillage. An ExxonMobil security officer joined the Delta Working Group on March 14th and reported that a militant known as Comrade Owe was behind the protests and associated threats. ExxonMobil had in fact paid between $25 million and $30 million in restitution for the 1998 spill, but the corporation had turned away demands for compensation from communities that it does not believe were materially affected by the spill. The corporation felt that it was in a bind. It took the militants' ultimatum very seriously, a second corporate official told the American embassy in Abuja. It felt its options were limited. ExxonMobil depended primarily on a military command in the Delta, the Joint Task Force, and the notorious state security services for protection. Neither seemed prepared to confront the emerging threats. ExxonMobil reported that it had embarked on an advocacy campaign at all levels of Nigeria's government, arguing that Nigeria cannot afford to allow MEND and other militant groups to creep into Akwa Ibom and threaten ExxonMobil as they already threatened Shell and Chevron in neighboring states. Were this to occur, the crisis would encompass virtually all of Nigeria's oil-producing coast. Chaplin and some of his colleagues feared a step-by-step military escalation that might lead Nigeria's military-influenced government to unleash a scorched-earth policy, regardless of its impact on civilians, which would only make a bad situation worse for the companies.